Chapters 12 and 13 cover brain, spinal cord, spinal nerves. I know. Okay, chapters 12 and 13 cover brain, spinal cord, spinal nerves. We don't cover cranial nerves by detail in here. You guys will be doing that in lab over the next few weeks. So I just wanted to put that out there, that the cranial nerve discussion is for lab. What I'd like to do is just give you some foundational material today. I know your brains are shot from having taken the test. So we're just going to work from page 104 and see how far we can go today. In terms of coverings and protections for the central nervous system, which is brain and spinal cord, we have bone, which is, of course, the skull and the vertebrae that forms the outer covering, and we also have membranes known as meninges. Those are deep to the bones, so technically they sit underneath the bones and provide a covering for those organs. Meninges means membrane, and there's actually three layers on both brain and spinal cord. You've got a hard, tough covering called the dura mater. It's kind of like the thickness of wax paper. Technically, dura mater means tough mother, so it's a tough, leathery covering. We then have a spider web-like layer called the arachnoid mater, and that arachnoid layer is one through which cerebrospinal fluid will circulate. Come down a layer deeper, and you're now into what's called a delicate pia mater, and that pia mater directly covers both brain and spinal cord. So if we want to sample the cerebrospinal fluid circulating around brain and spinal cord, into which of these three layers should we sample? Arachnoid matter, exactly. In fact, the lumbar tap that is performed will sample that fluid from the arachnoid layer. So just to kind of give you the perspective here, you've got your bone. Underneath is dura mater, arachnoid, pia mater, and then underneath you can see that's where the brain is found. This is just as well could be the way the spinal cord is set up. Same exact layering process here. On this picture on the right-hand side, you can actually see the dura mater. It is a tough, opaque layer. It's meant to provide protection for both brain and spinal cord. And on the left-hand side, there is no dura mater. They've removed it. And what you can see is the shiny pia mater underneath. I've often heard the pia mater described as a shrink wrap covering. If you've bought a product in the store that has plastic shrink wrapping adhered to the product, that's exactly how pia mater works. It's a very tightly anchored, very thin transparent layer, kind of like saran wrap, that anchors to that underlying nervous tissue. I just want to show you in this picture, you've probably heard about sinuses around the brain. These sinuses are in fact vessels, and they are laying in folds of dura mater. In fact, this piece here that's found between your left and right hemispheres is a fold of dura mater in which we have a superior sagittal sinus. So that sinus picks up blood draining out of the brain. Same thing back here. There's another fold of dura mater laying between the cerebrum and cerebellum, and that also has a sinus or a big vein. That one's called a transverse sinus, also picking up blood draining out of the vein. So the folds of dura mater are actually like wedgies. They go into the cracks between the brain parts, and of course the vessels lay in the wedgie. Okay. All right, so down below, let's talk about the parts of your spinal cord for just a moment. All right, so there are 31 pairs of spinal nerves that emerge from your spinal cord. I'll come back to that in just a moment. Pull up a different picture for you. Okay, so the spinal cord is about, 18 inches long. That's about a foot and a half in length. 31 pairs of spinal cords, spinal nerves rather, emerge from the spinal cord. They actually start at your neck and they run down to about where your waist is. At your waist, your spinal cord terminates. And below that point, you actually don't have a spinal cord. All you have is a tail-like structure called the cauda equina. And there are no more spinal cord structures, just spinal nerves below that point. We actually name the regions of your spine by which vertebrae we've got associated there. So from lab, what are the first seven vertebrae called?
the
cervical, good. The next 12 are?
Thoracic.
And the last 5?
Lumbar.
Good. And then below the lumbar vertebrae, sacrum and?
Coccyx.
Coccyx, good. The spinal nerves are almost exactly the same. You know, you probably learn breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 7, 12, and 5 for those vertebrae. In fact, there are 8, 12, and 5 in terms of the spinal nerves. Then there's sacral spinal nerves, and there's a coccygeal spinal nerve pair as well. So if you're keeping in mind the 12 or 7, 12, and 5 for your vertebrae, just remember that there are actually 8 instead of 7 cervical spinal nerves. I'd like to take a moment to kind of jot down something so you can see how this works. Bodies of your vertebrae. Of course, there are 7 cervical vertebrae. They're numbered from C1 to C7. The next body is a T1 vertebrae. So we're looking at the thoracic one starting there. There's actually a pair of spinal nerves that emerge above C1, and those are called the C1 spinal nerves. So the naming scheme continues just as you would expect until we get down here, and then it gets kind of weird. Okay, there is your 8th pair of cranial nerves. They do emerge above T1, so it's a little oddball there that you've got a cranial nerve pair, sorry, cervical nerve pair, sitting up above a thoracic vertebrae. So from the cervical vertebrae, you've got cranial nerves sitting above them for which they are named. Okay, so all the cervical vertebrae sit above the vertebrae for which they are named. And then watch the transition. Once we get down here to T1, that's our first thoracic vertebrae. They're below, exactly. All cervical spinal nerves sit above the cervical vertebrae. That is so hard to say.
So until it gets to the thoracic, and then those are below.
That is right.
The thoracic starts from ones below, like the nerves are below, right?
Yeah, that from there down is all below.
So technically, C8 is like C7 has 2. Technically.
Well, C7 has a C7 above it and
and C8 below.
Yeah,
and then. The thoracic has below.
Yeah, so that's where the transition. Yeah. Yeah, so the weird one here, you probably realize, is C8. It's the oddball because it's transitioned right there between the last cervical vertebrae and your first thoracic vertebrae. So the spinal cord ends around L1 or L2 in terms of vertebrae. So like I said, it's about where your waist sits. And below that point, all we have are spinal nerves that form a tail-like ending called a cauda equina. I want to show you what that looks like. Right down here at the very bottom, you'll notice right about here are our lower lumbar vertebrae. And we've actually lost our spinal cord there. And these are just spinal nerves that branch. They travel through the sacral area. And they travel down the legs and innervate the organs in the lower part around the pelvic cavity. Okay, so in this view here, I've lost my picture. Let me get you backwards just a bit. There it is. Cauda equina is technically a horse's tail. That is where we get the name for all those branched spinal nerves that are at the very end of your spinal cord. And there is a little piece of membrane that sheaths over the top of it. And that helps to kind of protect and cover that horse's tail. So I've kind of got a mental image of a horse rider. You know how they have the blankets that kind of cover over the tail? That's what the membrane does. The conus medullaris has a membrane that sheets down over the top of that cauda equina to protect those lower spinal, which are sacral and coccygeal in nature, spinal nerves. Okay, so tricky words here to keep straight, right? Very bottom of your page, I'd like to take you into detail for a spinal nerve. And so we're going to work on a peripheral nervous system term here. The word nerve implies that we're working no longer in the central nervous system, but rather in the peripheral nervous system. Okay, so I'm going to take you to a picture that's on your next page. And it looks like this. And that's on the bottom of page 105. Or, if you want, pull out a piece of blank paper and let's draw it from scratch. About the spinal nerve, I'm going to include the spinal cord, which is technically part of your central nervous system. I'm going to build the spinal cord from the inside out. I'm going to start you off with this hole here in the very center of the spinal cord. You know what that hole is called?
Central
canal. Good. In the central canal. Spinal fluid, so cerebrospinal fluid that is made by your brain, actually travels around the inside and outside of your brain and the inside and outside of your spinal cord. So it is traveling through the entire length of your spinal cord in that central canal. There is a piece of nervous tissue that surrounds that central canal. And this bridge right here around it is called the gray commissure. Okay, so we'll go ahead and make note that that is the gray commissure. That gray commissure is a bridge connecting the left and right sides of your spinal cord. Information that goes up or down the spinal cord has to come across that gray commissure. You've probably heard that the right side of your brain controls the left side of your body and vice versa. So to get it to the opposite side of your body, we have to go across this gray commissure. So I think of it as a bridge that connects the left and right sides of your spinal cord. I'm going to toss a term out for you. We're going to use it throughout the remainder of this course. Contralateral control. What that means is the right side of your brain controls the left side of your body. And the way we work across that gap is by working across that gray commissure. So yes, it is a bridge. Its job is to function in contralateral control. So I want you to notice something that's kind of cool. You've actually got something that looks like the East Coast here, doesn't it? You've got Maine, you've got the Carolinas sticking out, there's Florida down there. Okay, so these are actually three horns of gray matter. Okay, and we're going to do the very same thing on the other side. Looks kind of like a butterfly or an H. This is what we call the gray matter of the spinal cord. And because it is gray matter, what does it lack?
Myelin
sheaths, right. So nerve impulses are actually slower in the gray matter because of the missing myelin sheaths. label those horns, there is a dorsal horn that sits toward the backside. The dorsal horn is also the same as a posterior horn. Okay, so dorsal horns house interneurons. I know we talked about those on Monday. Interneurons are found only in your central nervous system, and they're the middleman. What do they communicate between?
Motor and sensory.
Good. So dorsal horns are home to interneurons. Okay. This one here, this bump out that looks like the Carolinas, that is our lateral horn of gray matter. So when we talk about the various types of nervous systems, we know that there is a branch called an autonomic nervous system and a branch called a somatic. All I did was mention those terms back when we covered the introduction the other day. Didn't explain them any further. So now I'd like to take an opportunity to explain what those terms mean. The autonomic nervous system performs automatic functions, and automatic functions are those that are involuntary in nature. So what are some involuntary functions that occur without you having to be involved?
Your heartbeat.
Breathing. Yeah. So these kinds of activities are controlled by cardiac muscles, somewhat smooth muscles, glands, of course. So these kinds of automatic or involuntary events are controlled by your autonomic nervous system. So here in the lateral horn, we have motor neurons that are involved in that automatic control. Just to help you remember this, this is involuntary control. So we're looking at things like smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and glands. So you may already be thinking about test questions here. If you damage the lateral horn, you could damage involuntary control of events like smooth muscle activity or glands or even, you know, to some extent, cardiac muscle activity. So that lateral horn is the involuntary horn of our gray matter. This ventral horn, though, down here that looks like Florida, that's going to be our voluntarily controlled skeletal muscles, and our somatic nervous system controls those. So SNS stands for somatic nervous system. And just to keep us straight, this is voluntary control of things like skeletal muscles. Picture that's in the course pack for you, VM stands for visceral motor, and at the very bottom there, it says, hard to read, SM stands for somatic motor. So when you see the word visceral, you want to think about involuntary autonomic nervous system. When you see S, you're thinking about somatic, and somatic implies that we're dealing with voluntary controlled skeletal muscles. The left and right sides are the same. You know, you've got a dorsal horn, you've got a lateral and a ventral horn on the other side. So of course you can label that over there if you would like to. Let me draw in the white matter that surrounds. Kind of weird looking, but there's a crack in the front and a crack in the back here. And these little kind of indentations, you'll notice at the top and the bottom right there. and right there on the white matter. Since we've identified our dorsal horn, we know that the dorsal or posterior side is in that same general area. This time we're going to talk about all this stuff that's called white matter. And instead of calling the white matter regions horns, we call them columns.
Good.
So, if you think about columns on a house, those columns run up and down, and that's in fact what these columns do. They carry information from your brain down your spinal cord, or from the bottom regions up to your brain. So I think of the white matter as elevators carrying sensory and motor information to and from your brain.
So which part is the column and then the what?
There's actually three columns we're going to talk about. The first one is this dorsal column back here at the back. Okay, that's one of them.
And that's the white matter.
That is the white matter, right.
Okay, so the columns is the white matter.
Columns are white.
Columns are the green.
That's right. On the side over here next to your lateral horn is an adjacent region of white matter. We're going to call that our lateral column of white matter. Gray matter is unmyelinated, and it looks like an H or a butterfly. And it is surrounded by the white matter. The white matter is myelinated, and it is on the external portion of your spinal cord. Okay, so we've got dorsal column on the sides. We have lateral columns. Down below, we've actually got a ventral column of white matter. These are myelinated, and so the nerve impulses here travel faster, since all the impulse has to do is jump from one node of Ranvier to the next. And that matters because that information is traveling up to your brain or down from your brain. It's either sensory in nature going up, or it's motor in nature coming down. Looks like we've now got room for our spinal nerve. I'm going to draw a spinal nerve off this side. You ran out of room. Okay, so what you just drew is central nervous system. This is all spinal cord. I'm just going to bracket that off for us.
On the other side?
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, whichever side you can fit it on. Yeah, that is a spinal nerve going out, and that's going to be our peripheral nervous system. This spinal nerve is part of your peripheral nervous system. It has two roots. It's got a root on the back and a root on the front. You'll notice that they're not the same. The root on the back has a bulb-like structure. We call that a ganglion. So I should go ahead and tell you that a ganglion is a term that implies a bunch of neurons all collected together. It's like a crowd, or guess what? A gang, right? So it's a gang of neurons collected together. So that's what I'm looking for. That little bulb right there is called what?
Ganglion.
Yeah, dorsal root ganglion.
Ganglion.
so that dorsal root ganglion is the way that I know the back side from the front side. The spinal cord cross-section model you guys will look at in lab is going to have that whole same setup. That's what you want to use to determine dorsal or posterior from ventral anterior, okay? Sensory information is carried into your spinal cord by way of that dorsal root, and that ganglion, like we said, is just a gang of nerve cells collected there like a little bulb. This root coming out from the bottom side is not sensory, it's actually motor in nature, and because it's close to the bottom side, we're going to call it a ventral root.
Ventral root.
Ventral root, yeah. So, last thing to label, you now have what's called a mixed spinal nerve. Yeah, right here where they combine, that's now a mixed spinal nerve. It is a two-way street instead of two separate one-way streets. Okay, and so that takes us actually over to the halfway point of page 105. Which is where I'll pick you guys up on Monday, and we'll work through the rest of this material on Monday.